How many of you guys, and I don't have a lot of the youth here, but how many of you guys have been to camp? How many of you guys have been to a men's or women's conference? How many of you guys have been to like what Jacob went through, kind of a addictions counseling program? Maybe a couple, one or two. Okay. Well, yeah. One of the things that comes out of this, and I was at camp a couple weeks ago at high school camp, and it was really, really challenging, really great. The kids grew a lot. But one of the things that we talk about when the campers go home, and the counselors get all together, and we kind of assess what happened during the week, and we talk about the good things and the bad things that happen, there's something that's called camp high or camp spiritual high. And let me explain this to you. Any of you who have been to a camp or some sort of program or some religious spiritual retreat or something to that effect always come out with this feeling that you're on top of a mountain, right? You're spiritually high. You're at the highest place you've ever been with the Lord. Your relationship's on fire for God. You know, you have desire, you have a hunger, you have a thrive. I see that right now with Jacob. Jacob just, I didn't announce this because I wanted to kind of bring it up a little bit. Jacob just graduated from CODA, which is kind of a addictions program. And I have never seen Jacob more spiritually minded, more on fire for the Lord, more happy and joyful than he is right now. Is that probably, or at least in a long time? Very accurate. Okay, I have felt that way. When I was a camper in high school and junior high and boys camp before that and intermediate camp and day camp, every year, and anytime I went to a retreat or anything, every year at the end, I'm like, man, this is great. I'm on fire for the Lord. Well, what happens? We're on the top of the mountain, and then a couple weeks later, we slowly drift down. We slowly drift down. We slowly drift down. And then we're back into the swamp, so to speak. And we lose that hunger. We lose the zeal. We lose the fire for God. And that's what happens when we come home to real life. So I have a couple questions for you. Why are you here? Why are you at church? Why did you come today? I can tell you why I came. Well, I'm scheduled on to preach, right? So I kind of have to show up, and I didn't want to leave Dan doing the music. But why would I come to a church? Why? To get the zeal back. That's great. That's really good. One of the other questions is, what do you come to accomplish? When you're sitting, singing the songs, listening to the message, maybe taking communion, what are you trying to accomplish with coming? What are your goals? If you're here to listen to a great message, you probably came to the wrong place, because I'm not Billy Graham or Charles Stanley or Swindoll or those other guys that are amazing preachers, right? You could probably listen to them on the radio and get entertained that way. You're probably not here for the fantastic music, although I have to admit, since Dan got here, it has gotten a little better. So there are other places you could have gone for that. Why are you here? What are you here to accomplish? And if it is those things, to just listen to a nice message and sing some good songs and break the bread, and if that's all there is to your purpose of being here, or maybe it's to bring your kids so that they can learn about the Lord, and those are all good things, but in the end, for you personally, they're going to be meaningless. Because if you've come just to hear a good message or to listen to some crazy guys playing music, in the end, it's going to be meaningless. Is your goal to be a good person by coming here? That's one of the other things. When people say, well, I go to church, I must be a good person. I don't know very many of you people who would say that, I'm hoping. Because going to church, it's like saying, well, I'm in McDonald's, I must be a hamburger. Or I'm in a garage, I must be a car, right? So just because you're here doesn't mean you're a good person. There are a lot of evil people that probably have come to church a few times in their life. My point is, by asking these questions, is that there's a higher goal, like Suzanne mentioned, to gain that zeal back, to relight that fire that was once there during the camp high, right, that we've all experienced, or most of us have experienced. God wants us, ultimately, to enjoy him. He wants us to relate to him, to have a relationship with him. He wants us to know him, and when we get to know him, we enjoy him. We are satisfied by him. We are fulfilled by him. The more we know God, the more we will enjoy him. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about is looking at a couple of Old Testament examples of this. When you look through Scripture, we find that God had a process of letting himself be known to people in the Old Testament. And I've got a list of people here. We've got Adam and Eve. And you remember in the garden, God walked with Adam and Eve, right? He had a relationship with them. They talked with him. They walked through the orchard. I was reading in Genesis this week in that class, the Old Testament survey, it talks about how he walked through the orchard with them. You ever wonder what they talked about? I kind of thought, well, gee, I wonder what God told them. I wonder what they told God. Because there was communion, there was communication, they knew each other. God wanted to make himself known and to be enjoyed. The next one is Abraham. If we look at Acts chapter 2, or chapter 7, verse 2, it talks about God appearing to Abraham. And we see that all throughout the Old Testament as well. Then in Moses' life, God took Moses up on the mountain, and for 40 days, he got to know God. Could you imagine being with God? Well, we get 6 days at camp. Well, seven, I guess, but really six because of the half days. But from Sunday to Saturday, we have a time that we can really spend with God, getting to know God out at camp. But Moses had 40 days uninterrupted with God. And you know what he said at the end of that? I have he says, "Show me thy way that I may know thee." He spent 40 days with God, and he still had a desire to know more. You would think that 40 days, he'd have a pretty good idea who God was, but he was barely scratching the surface. And then we look at the prophets, all the prophets that I, and there's tons of them, but I list off Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Zechariah. There's all the prophets. In order for them to be prophets of God, they had to have some sort of relationship of listening to God and getting to know God and being able to hear him speak into their lives. And that's by definition for being able to be a mouthpiece of God. They had to know who God was. He didn't stop in the Old Testament. Relationship with God continued into the New Testament. And he says in John chapter 1, verse 14, "Now the world became flesh." The Word became flesh. And we know the Word is Jesus. "The Word became flesh and took up residence among us." So he came to the earth and lived with us. "We saw his glory, the glory of the one and only, full of grace and truth, who came from the Father." So God came to us that we could see his glory. We could see who he was, see that he was a perfect being. And ultimately, the more we got to know him, and the more that we get to know him now, the more we enjoy him. God has a desire to be known and enjoyed. And when we enjoy him, we respond to him, don't we? When we respond to him, we come out with praise, adoration, worship, probably a lot of other responses that we can come up with. When we were in our pre-natal, what do they call that, classes? Pre-birthing classes, I guess is what they call them. And when we were heading up to having Dylan and our first child, and we had all these people giving us advice about feeding. How do you feed your child, right? I didn't know it would be this complicated. But some people really commanded us to do the four-hour thing, right? Every 4 hours, you feed. And what would happen is, 6 in the morning, Andrea would feed Dylan. I mean, theoretically, we abandoned this idea pretty quickly. At 6 a.m., Andrea would feed him. At 10 a.m., I'd feed him a bottle of breast milk, of pumped milk, whatever. And then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd do another feeding. And then at 6 o'clock, she would do another feeding. And then at 10 o'clock, she would do another feeding. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, when we're all passed out asleep, including Dylan, they'd want you to do another feeding. And then at 6 o'clock again in the morning, so basically her sleep would be completely thrown off. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, Dylan wouldn't even be awake. So she'd have to wake him up and somehow entice him to be hungry when he wasn't hungry. And there's that theory of feeding. The other theory of feeding was, he'll let you know when he's hungry. Because when he's hungry, he'll start crying, and you'll know as a parent, a mother or father, you'll know the cry of a hungry child. And I want to propose to you that God's a lot more interested, or the way that God approaches us is more like demand feeding. When we are hungry, he will feed us. So my message today is, are you hungry? Are you seeking after God? Do you want to know God's will? Do you want to know who God is? That is being hungry. And as we sang a few minutes ago, as the deer panteth for the water, or whatever Andrew was trying to sing, I'm not sure the different version of it, but as the deer pants for the water, so my soul thirsts, is what the verse says, after you. So I want to ask you, are you looking at your life as the four-hour method with God, whether you want to read about him or not, whether you want to do something or not, you do the four-hour method, or are you doing the demand feeding? Because I would propose to you that God is more into feeding you while you're hungry, because it's much easier to feed you when you're hungry than when you're not hungry. And this is clearly illustrated when you look at Exodus chapter 33, verse 11, God and Moses. He says, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face, the way a person speaks to a friend. Face to face implies that there's a desire for both of them to come together and to speak. God's not going to chase after you. I mean, he has before, but for the most part, God will feed you when you are ready to come to him and you have a longing, a hunger, a thirst to know him face to face, the way a person speaks to a friend. It also kind of gives you the idea that there's an intimacy, a closeness. And as I read to you a few minutes before, Moses still, after God spoke face to face with him, as a friend would talk, Moses still had more longing to learn more about God. He said a few verses after that, he says, show me thy way that I may know thee. And this is after he already spent time with him and spoke to him face to face. And if you skip a few verses now, he says, now if I have found favor in your sight, show me your way that I may know you, that I may continue to find favor in your sight and see that this nation is your people. Show me your way. He still longed. He still had a desire to know more about the Lord. So Moses had an appetite, a hunger to know more about God. God reveals more to you when there is an appetite. He doesn't force feed you. Now, in some ways, when there's a desire that God has, like with Jonah, he will force feed you, or at least force you into doing something that he wants you to do in his will. But as far as getting to know him, he will not force feed you. He wants you to come face to face and have the desire to learn more about him and to be closer to him. If you look at the relationship between God and David, we know David was the second king of Israel, and he was a shepherd before he became king. He wasn't part of the royalty, as far as there wasn't really a monarchy of birthright in David's case, although I guess he married into it. But he was raised as a shepherd, and he had the shepherd's mentality, or at least the sheep and the wilderness kind of mentality. He could see pictures of God through nature and God's creation. And one of the verses that we all know, and we sang a version of it a few minutes ago in As the Deer, he says, as the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for you, for the living God. I say, when will I be able to go and appear in God's presence? Talk about a thirst, a hunger to be in God's presence, to know God, to see him, to learn about him, to enjoy him. And we have that picture of a deer before. I kept thinking of camp because there's a creek, you know, the Eagle Creek that goes through there. And camp's sort of built around, it's kind of morphed a little bit over the years, but it's sort of built around that creek. And a lot of people use the camp high, like you're on top of a mountain and you're, you know, really near God and close to God. But I think of it more, when I think of a spiritual high, I think of being next to a creek and just drinking the water, the crystal clear water. And I think of that as being drinking from God, learning more about God and who he is. And David saw it the same way I do. I'm sure that there's other ways of looking at that as a picture. But as a deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for God, for the living God. Now, we also see the Apostle Paul. Now, he was probably the father of the grace theology as far as documenting it. He wrote letters to all of these churches. He was encouraging them and starting them and building them and overseeing them in certain ways. And yet at the end of his life, at the end of his ministry, it doesn't say that he wants to see everybody come to know the Lord or everybody to be Christians. He doesn't say, I want the churches to grow. His number one goal was what? It says right here in Philippians 3:10, it says, my aim is to know him, to experience the power of his resurrection, to share in his sufferings, and to be like him in his death. There's 1,000 things he could have said. I want to be more righteous. I want to have better churches. I want to leave a legacy. I want to do this. I want to do that. But the one thing he said is, my aim is to know him, meaning Christ, to know God, to experience the power of his resurrection, to share in his sufferings, and to be like him in his death. Then we have another picture, God revealing himself to the disciples. In Mark chapter 3, verses 13 and 14, it says, now Jesus went up the mountain and called for those he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12, whom he named apostles, so that they would be with him and he could send them to preach. Now, there's an interesting part here that I want to bring up. Before he sent them out, what does it say? It says, so that they could be with him. The more you're with God, the more you get to know him. The more you hunger. And it's almost like a cycle, right, Jacob? The cycle that you've seen probably is that the more time you spend with the Lord, the more time you want to spend with the Lord. And it doesn't become a force feeding like the four-hour method of a baby. It becomes a demand feeding of, man, I can't wait to get in the scriptures. I'll tell you, when I'm doing this Old Testament survey, I binged quite a bit. I'd call up Andrea in the morning and I'd say, I'm watching the next lecture and I'm reading through the next thing in Genesis. And she's like, how are the kids doing? I don't know. They seem to be okay. They're playing. And I couldn't wait to get into the next chapter. I couldn't wait to get into the next lecture and read the next section of the course. And it's the same thing with Jacob. It's the same thing with the kids at camp. They can't wait to get in the scripture. But what happens? They don't do it. I guess one of the applications is that when you have the desire, do it. Because if you don't do it while the desire's hot, it'll go away. And use church, use the radio, sermons on the radio. There are some great preachers. There are some not so great preachers, but you can learn something from all of them. But don't let the zeal, don't let the thirst, the hunger go away. And I want to take you to the last picture that we have. We have God and Martha. We remember in Luke chapter 10, and it's interesting that they don't mention this section, this particular incident. I don't think they mention it in Matthew, Mark, or John. I might be wrong, but the only place I could really pinpoint it was in Luke. In Luke chapter 10, we'll start with verse 38. Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered, meaning him and the disciples, Jesus entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him as a guest. So we have this woman named Martha. When it says that she showed him, or that she welcomed him as a guest, really we can see that she must have been showing him some hospitality, because we see that she feeds him in a few minutes here. We'll read that section. She probably housed him because he was traveling from outside of the city, outside of the area. So we get a pretty good idea that she's got a pretty large house and she probably had a lot of things, because she gave him food to eat and she gave him a place to stay and fellowship. And it must have been a pretty good sized house because of all of the disciples having a room to sleep. So she obviously had a pretty large place there. And at this point in history, from what I understand from some of the commentaries, with when a family had this size of a house, they probably had a lot of servants, kind of maids or what we would consider butlers and maids and maybe nannies if they had any kids. And these would be the people that make the house run right. And so what we see here is we see a picture of a house that was probably decent size, and we see Martha welcoming in Jesus and the disciples and serving them. But what's kind of shocking about this is that as we read on in verses 39 and 40, we see that Martha does a lot of the work, which is not normal in a situation if you had a house this size. So she obviously felt like serving this Jesus person that was coming in and she was showing hospitality. She felt like personally serving him. So it goes on, she had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he said. But Martha was distracted with all the preparations she had to make. So she came up to him and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work alone?" And that's kind of referring to inferring, I guess, that Mary was probably doing some of the work too. So she said, "Don't you care that my sister has left me?" She left the work and went and sat at your feet, and she left all the work for me. And she says, "Tell her to help me." So we have this lady who's probably fairly well off, and her sister who's probably fairly well off with her, and of course we know her brother from different texts. But these two women who are fairly well off in this decent-sized house, and they've probably got servants, but instead of letting the servants do all the work, they're helping out with the preparations, probably because they wanted to maybe impress Jesus, because he was pretty pretty cool guy. He was doing a lot of miracles at this point. So what happens from there? Mary was found where? Not hiding in a closet trying to get out of doing work. Where was she found? Anybody know where Mary was found? At Jesus' feet. Why would she be sitting there at his feet? What's that? She wanted to soak it in. I think probably of all of the stories that I've mentioned so far, this is the most applicable story. Before service, Mary thought more about knowing God, sitting at his feet, sitting at the Lord Jesus' feet, getting to know him personally. And she wanted to do that more than she wanted to serve him. She wanted to know him. Why? Well, I think that the order of our relationship with God, and this is going back to maybe grace theology, if you want to call it that, is understanding that knowing God is the first part of your relationship with him. Service comes second. If you're interested in becoming an elder or becoming a children's Sunday school teacher, or becoming the head of the music program, or even serving in the music program, or serving in the nursery, or serving in the kitchen. Those things are great things that need to be done. In fact, we have a laundry list of things around here that need to be done. But the most important thing, the most important thing, is sitting at the Lord's feet first, getting to know him, soaking him in, being thirsty, like longing for, like the deer that longs to be next to the creek, to drink it in, and to eat the nice green grass. What did the Lord answer? He says, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things." Martha understood that Jesus and the disciples were likely to be hungry and tired, and they needed all this service. They needed a place to sleep. They needed to eat. They probably needed to wash up their hands. Traveling in that day was pretty dirty business. They probably had a lot of needs that needed to be done. A lot like this little church here. We have a ton of needs around here. Probably more than we even realize. Martha wanted to do anything that she could to show her love. And through her works towards him, she set out to prove her devotion and her love for him. I want to ask you, is that where you're at? Through your good works, through your devotion, through your constant service to him, is that how you're trying to show your love towards him and devotion towards him? Because he goes on in verses 41 and he says, or 42, "But one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the best part. It will not be taken away from her." Mary sat at his feet. She soaked it in. She learned about him. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of service things that we could do that in the end they're going to be burned up and gone. Camp will probably disappear in the new heavens and the new earth. This church might even not be here. You know, these nice chairs and the nice kitchen downstairs, it's all going to go away eventually. The people after us are going to throw these chairs out, buy new ones, probably remodel the place, hopefully, keep it going. These things are all going to be gone. These are all temporary. But Jesus says, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the best part, and it will not be taken away from her. Your service is great in God's eyes, but what's more important is your hunger to know him. As important as it is to meet the physical needs of Jesus and his disciples at that time, it doesn't compare to entering into personal fellowship with him. Dwight Pentecost described this passage. I found a really good quote from him. He says, it was more important to be occupied with Jesus than it was to be occupied for Jesus. I'll repeat that maybe a couple times. It is more important to be occupied with Jesus than it was to be occupied for Jesus. It was more important to be occupied with Jesus than it was to be occupied for Jesus. It will never be taken away from us. So I have another question. Is your appetite satisfied? Are you satisfied where you sit right now? I know Jacob's not. He still has hunger. He still has a thirst. And coming away from camp, your kids, or a retreat. You know, I know that ODF goes on camping trips almost every weekend. And they might learn something new about the Lord and really spark fire for the Lord. Is your appetite satisfied where you're at? You could go to a camp every single year. You could go to women's retreats or men's retreats every year. You could go to church campouts like ODF does every weekend, I think, or every other weekend. You could even go to Bible college or seminary. You can study all about God. You could know a great amount about God and the Bible and still not know him because you don't take the time to know him. You could be a camp director. I've seen a few camp directors that are more interested in the service than they are about the person of Jesus Christ. There's more Bible college professors now that care more about arguing their points than they do about the love of God. Today, the one thing I want to leave with you, my deepest desire, is that you spend time. It could be at church, it could be at camp, it could be listening to 93.9 or whatever the KPDQ, I guess is what it's called. But take time getting to know God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That will only happen if you have an appetite for him. It doesn't happen overnight. One of the illustrations that I thought of is a relationship that you have with someone that's going to be your future spouse. Now, occasionally, there'll be someone that says, I proposed to her after 2 weeks of knowing her. Now, generally speaking, I don't recommend that probably. And it may work out for them just great. But for the most part, most people, they get to, you know, they maybe see them at school, maybe see her at the coffee shop or a church, and you spark an interest in her. She maybe smiles a little at you. And there's this years of developing a relationship. It doesn't just happen overnight. And you know what? For guys, I don't know what it's like for girls, but the guys, there's a desire there to get to know the girl a little bit more. A little bit more. Hey, could I take you out for coffee? You know, you make a point to spend time together because you're hungry to get to know her. You want to get to know her. Hey, maybe we should go out for dinner. Maybe we could go see a movie. Right? And so years of this, I don't want to call it a dance or a tango, but years of this getting to know each other, the intimacy of getting to know your future spouse, and then ultimately marrying that person. It doesn't happen overnight. And oftentimes we expect to know God right now. I want to know him now. I'm at camp. I have 1 week. This is it. And then after camp's over, you're kind of like, well, I don't know everything. I don't feel everything. I don't understand everything. You don't understand everything about marriage either, especially when you're in it. But the point is that there is a desire there to get to know the other person. And that's how it should be to get to know God. It's not going to happen immediately. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. It's going to take years, persistence, endurance. It takes a lot of desire and long hours to get to know God. So set it as a goal to know God, to know Jesus personally, to know and experience intimate fellowship through the Spirit. I want to ask you a question that I don't want anybody to answer because I don't want it to be an indictment on me. But today, if you could think back a year ago, is your relationship with God better now today than it was a year ago? Do you know more about God now than you did 1 year ago? For some of us, we could say yes. Jacob, I could say within the last 3 months. For me, I could say I know him more through trials and that kind of stuff, and through reading scriptures and just contemplating, meditating on his words. I can say yes. But are you at a place now where you are closer to God, you're more challenged to know more about God now, and you know more about God now than you did a year ago? It's kind of like exercising. If you have a desire to get to the gym every morning, you're going to get to the gym every morning, especially if you have the desire and the discipline, I should say. And if you have the desire to get to know God, it's going to take desire and discipline to get to know God. And that starts through daily exercise, daily getting to know him. Jacob was just telling me a few minutes ago that he prays, or I think he mentioned it in the communion service, he prays every day. He starts off the day with a prayer. That's like exercising, getting up and walking the treadmill, walking around the block, jumping jacks, push-ups, whatever someone does to exercise their body. Jacob's doing that. He's praying every morning, exercising his faith, getting to know God more, being in the presence of God more. The more you spend time at his feet, the more you'll long for it. And I would ask that if you don't have the hunger, to pray for it. Pray for the hunger, the desire, the thirst. And put yourself in situations that can ignite that. I mean, coming to church is a great thing. Spending time with other believers, encouraging one another. That is a good way to light that fire, light the hunger, the thirst. Another good way is to go to camp, go to conferences, listen to Christian radio. Spend time in the Word. That's the biggest one. Spend time in the Word. And as Mary, it says, Mary did the best thing. She could sit at his feet. The way that we can sit at his feet is by sitting there, reading his word, meditating on it, praying to him, and listening for his nudging, or maybe he'll talk to you audibly. He hasn't said a whole lot audibly to me, but he nudges me all the time, like, I don't think I want you to go in that direction. I'll nudge you over here a little bit, and I'll nudge you over there a little bit. And listen to other Christians, because the counsel of other Christians is going to encourage you, because they're coming from the same source that you're coming from, and that's a relationship with Jesus Christ. So my one encouragement to you is to be hungry for the Lord, to be thirsty for the Lord. And just like we sang that song, well, I have the verse here somewhere. Yeah. As the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for God, for the living God. And one of the things that I want you to do, if you're wanting application, is I want you to take this verse, Psalm 42:1, and I want you to memorize it this week. Not very long. In fact, we know most of it from that song that we sing, a little different translation. But as the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for God, for the living God. Not that difficult, not a long verse, but if that doesn't inspire you, there's nothing else I could say that could.